I'd like to call the Transportation Finance Division to order. We don't have a quorum as yet, but we can start taking testimony. Representative Saylor, would you want to start? You're first on the agenda. Before I make that announcement, and again, we have to remind the members and the public to turn off their cell phones because it disrupts our recording device. Or any kind of electronic device that you have.
We don't have a quorum yet.
Representative Saylor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
is your mic on?
Is it on?
Yeah, oh,
I just need to be closer to it. Yes, I just have a bill for Veterans Memorial Highway, and that would be House File 121.
Representative Phillip, I'll move your bill to pass as amended and return to the Finance Committee.
So. Thank you. I'll just go over it very briefly. This is for Clearwater County Veterans Memorial Drive. In 1999, Otter Trail County veterans designated a drive that ended in Becker County. In 2006-07, the Becker County veterans replicated and continued this road up to the top of Becker County, the bottom of Clearwater County. And in the spring of 2007, three veterans organizations in Clearwater County, the Bagley, Clearbrook, and Gonvick American Legions, proposed to continue this highway in Clearwater County. And that would designate 1.5 miles of Trunk Highway 200 from its junction with County State Aid 39 to its junction with Trunk Highway 92 at Zirkle, and then designate about 27 miles of Trunk Highway 92 from that southerly terminus to County State Aid Highway in Clearbrook. And the Bagley American Legion has the funds to pay for the signs. And I think we have two small oral amendments, if I'm not mistaken.
Representative Saylor, one of them is written, it was oral, but it's a written amendment, and I'd like to move that one.
Certainly.
And that's amendment number 801-21A2. It's in the bottom of your packet for members. Basically, what the amendment does, it provides that in the event that the people that requested the signs don't provide the maintenance money or something happens, that it allows the department to take down the signs. Sometimes that happens in 20, 30 years, the people that requested the sign don't know, I mean, they're gone, and no one else knows it. So this does authorize taking it down. If any questions, the members have the amendment in the packet. I believe it's the last one on the bottom. It's in with House File 121. Everyone have that one? Not any questions on the amendment? Not all in favor of the amendment? 802-21A2, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The amendment is passed. Representative Saylor, do you have another amendment?
Yes, and it's just simply that I believe there was a typo in designating the county number, where on line 1.11, which is from intersection Clearwater County State Aid Highway 37, that should be 39. I believe it was just a typo, and we'd like to make sure we have that correct.
Does everyone have that change? Any questions? If not, I'll move that amendment. See, I guess we don't need to. We can do it technically, so that amendment is approved. Any further questions as far as the bill? Representative Holmberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on the H2 amendment, will this apply to all signs, not just...
We're going to have it on the next bill, too, Representative Holmberg. Until we get it in the statute folder. Is that the question you're asking?
Well, I wasn't sure. It looks like it's amending existing language on highway designation costs, and so I'm just, I mean, I don't oppose it. I think it's a good idea, but will it apply to all memorial-type signs of this across the state?
I can ask Mr. Burris, but we specifically, because it's not in statute now, we put it to these two bills, and we hopefully put it in statute for the rest of them, but I don't think we can make it retroactive. Mr. Burris, would you want to comment?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, yes, this change would apply to maintenance going forward for all designated highway signs.
All right, thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, are these, because there are several on the agenda today, are all of these traveling separately, or what's your intention?
Yes, these are separate.
They are all traveling separately.
We only have two, that's it.
Okay.
Representative Saylor, did you indicate that it's not a trunk highway, it's a county state aid highway?
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and members, it is a trunk highway. I just mentioned some of the county state aid highways just for, you know, just to explain which ones were where. But as I understand it, in this, you wanted just the trunk highways to be designated, that portion of it?
I assumed it was a county state aid highway, but you say it's
okay.
A trunk highway.
Well, they're both. I mean, part of it is trunk highway, and you can verify this, I think, with Mr. Griffith.
It's a combination of both.
Right. It comes up from the bottom of Clearwater County on County State Aid Highway 39, which goes up to, joins 200 for about a mile and a half, going up to Zirkle, and then when 200 splits off and goes west, 92 goes north to Bagley and north of Bagley. And then there's a little piece of County State Aid Highway 5 that goes north of Clearbrook going to the bottom of where the Red Lake Reservation starts.
Okay.
I have a little map of it if you would like.
No, that's fine. That just takes care of two entities. I thought it was just the one. No, that's not any problem. It's all within Clearwater County, too.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions? If not, the chair will renew his motion that House File, which one we got? 121 passed as amended and returned to the Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? House File, what did they say? 121 is passed.
Thank you.
The next bill off is Representative, we have a quorum now? We do have a quorum. Someone had a chance to look at the minutes for February 10th, was it? On February 5th?
Yeah.
Representative Morgan.
I'll move the minutes of February 5th,
Mr. Chair. The minutes have been moved. Is there any questions or comments? Not all in favor of the minutes for February 5th, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The minutes are approved. Representative Angel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I believe you have a delete everything amendment in your packet.
We do. Let's see, we'll have to get someone to move.
I'll move it.
Representative Hornstein moves House File 100? 110, we recommend that it pass as amended and returned to the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for your indulgence in hearing this bill. It's a special bill honoring a special person who served in this legislature for 34 years, beginning in 1964, 17 non-consecutive terms, and rose to be Speaker of the House. This would name Trunk Highway 53 from the northern city limits of the community of Virginia to the southern city limits of the city of International Falls, Speaker Anderson's hometown, as the Speaker Irvin N. Anderson Memorial Highway. This bill is here because Speaker Anderson passed away in November of this past year during the deer season, and in one of those very interesting conversations that I'll never forget, his spouse Phyllis asked about the possibility of doing this. And my first thought was, well, Phyllis, the legislature really frowns on doing these kinds of things, but because of Irv and because of his service to the entire state of Minnesota and his commitment to a multimodal transportation system. I'll do my best.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask for your support.
Actually, Mr. Anzelk, you moved to delete all amendment. I have a problem. That's with Representative Hornstein. Representative Hornstein? That was a delete all amendment that we had, not
yes.
The bill. So.
I believe so. Is that correct?
Yes. See, we also have another amendment. The author's here. It's my amendment, right? We haven't adopted this delete all amendment. Any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Delete all amendment is passed. We also have another amendment, and the chair will offer that amendment. It's the same amendment we had in the previous bill, which authorizes the department to take down the signs if there's no money for the maintenance of the signs. And we have that. It's 8010A1 in your packet. Everyone has the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? If not, the chair will again reiterate and move the passage of H01-10A1 amendment to House File 110. Any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Contrary? The amendment is adopted. Now, that's no further amendment. So, Representative Hornstein, you want to restate your message?
Sure, I would restate my motion that...
excuse me, Representative Hornstein, I do have a question. Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under the heading of discussion to the amended bill as we have it in front of us, remind me again, who's going to pay for these signs is the first part of the question, and related to that is, this is still going to be a numbered trunk highway, isn't it? So we're not going to completely rename the highway and drop the numbering.
Could I have Mr. Burris?
You certainly can. Yes.
Mr. Burris, or you can explain that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, there's a requirement currently in statute 161.139. You might note that you actually have the language before you if you want to take a look at it, because that's what was being amended by both of Representative Leader's amendments. This requirement is that non-state funds be used for the erecting and designing and maintenance of designated highway signs. And this designation is in addition to a trunk highway number. So that trunk highway number, numbered signs, stay in place on the roads, and then there's some additional signage that MnDOT puts up and maintains that identifies the named route.
All right, thank you.
Any further questions? If not, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Motion?
Yeah, I would move that House File 110, as amended, be passed and referred to the General Register.
The Finance.
It's the Finance, sorry.
Finance Committee. Okay. Any questions? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. House File 110, as amended, is passed and will be returned to the Finance Committee.
Thank you very much.
The next bill on the amendment, Representative Lilly. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Steve, before you get going, let's see, you have a bill in here? Someone has to move that one.
House File 259, and we have an amendment.
Justin Hausman moves House File 259. We're going to lay that bill over with no vote.
Right,
and refer to the body.
I further move. There's an author's amendment.
Okay, can we take the author's amendment first?
I would move A2.
Okay.
259A2.
Representative Hausman moves amendment H0259A2.
And Mr. Chair, it was drafted as though the money was going to Ramsey County. Ramsey County doesn't do these rail lines. It is the Commissioner of Transportation, so that one we caught. And then it just further includes an evaluation of a future extension beyond downtown St. Paul to downtown Minneapolis.
So the amendment, as you read it, is correct?
Yes.
Any comment or questions on the amendment?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I'm looking for that amendment. Here it is.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, it's Reverend Beard.
Is that 124A1 again? Which number was that?
H02592.
H02, here we go. Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chair?
Person Lilly?
Mr. Chair, if there's additional questions, Mr. Burris could probably help if there is, regards to the amendment.
Do you have a question on the amendment?
No, no. If there are any additional questions, he could probably help. He's been great and fixed some of the blunders that I had in the original drafting. So,
Representative Beard had a question.
I was looking for the number. I found it.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lilly, can you tell me what portion of the $10 million is for the state's share of the line itself, and what portion of the money will actually go for this additional study of the extension and the analysis of all previous passenger rail studies providing service in this corridor?
Representative Lilly?
Mr. Chair, maybe we can cover that when we get into our testimony. I don't know if you want to move that now or if you need an answer before you vote on the amendment. It was actually going to be covered probably by one of my star witnesses.
And Mr. Chair, I'm happy to wait. I'm just curious what our quote-unquote fair share is of the entire corridor study.
Okay, we'll pick it up then. Lily, you have a question? Or? Okay, you may proceed with your testimony. Oh, wait a minute. We didn't pass this amendment yet, did we?
No.
Any questions on the amendment? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. The amendment H025982 passed. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. When we do lay over the bill that we've amended, if we need to request an unofficial engrossment to be posted, because my understanding is if we don't move it to the next committee but we lay it over, the language doesn't actually get changed on the internet so that people can see what we did. And so I don't know if we request an unofficial engrossment from Mr. Burris or from somebody in the revisor's office, or if it's something that needs to be requested, because unless we request it, it wouldn't be amended online.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Portman, I do believe that you are correct that a change made in committee, if the bill is not moved out, won't be reflected online. I'll check with the revisor's office and get back to you and members about making this change visible or accessible to the public.
Thank you.
We have the amendments before us. Any other amendments? Not Representative Lilly, do you want to start your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Thank you for this opportunity to discuss House File 259. Simply put, House File 259 recognizes the commitment our state needs to make to ensure that we're not bypassed when they bring high-speed rail to Minnesota. This bill in the previous sessions has had plenty of support, and hopefully we can see support from the governor as we move forward this session. As you know, this bill funds the work that's needed to prepare existing track, to upgrade that to high speed, and so it's the connecting Chicago to Minnesota. If you've ever taken the train before, it's the Empire Builder line, Amtrak, that now runs from Chicago to the Twin Cities already. So it's currently existing track, so it would be upgraded. The significance of this bill is
is that it uses existing track. This track has been identified by the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative, which Representative Linda Slocum and Senator Thieben currently serve our state as members of. And this is, as it stands now, is probably the preferred route. My bill does not and should not stop us from studying how best to make connections to all points in Minnesota. This designated route between Chicago and St. Paul, again, does not stop us from looking at continuing on. I hope we do, continuing on to Minneapolis or to Rochester and in our long-term plans. The time is now to get to build this, and the federal government is pretty exciting with the new administration, and obviously I would think that Obama cares about Chicago and shooting lines off from there. And today with me I have a couple different folks. I have Mr. Rogers that does this full time and can really speak to the facts that, and maybe hopefully answer some of Representative Holbrook's questions. And I'm excited. I think it's a great opportunity for our state and really drive us in the future. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to travel in Europe and around. It's just the high-speed rails are really quite a neat option, and as we're looking at our future, I think it'll really put us on the map or help to keep us on the map. Maybe Mr. Rogers can speak, and then I don't know, given how much time you want to commit to this, we have a whole delegation of folks that Mr. Pawlowski's brought up from Winona, but you can kind of see a whole section. We have former... you're looking at time. Why don't we go with Mr. Rogers for right now, and then...
Actually, Mr. Rogers, if you'd start, that'd be fine. Welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Thanks again for hearing the bill. As we are aware, because this bill's been before you, it does not only connect the Twin Cities to Chicago, but it also connects to Madison and Milwaukee. The corridor in Minnesota is 150 miles, and that takes you from the Union Depot in downtown St. Paul all the way to La Crescent, where it leaves the state. It does utilize the existing Canadian Pacific track along the corridor, which is the route of the Empire Builder. And I think it's important to note that Amtrak service system-wide, so over the entire country, their ridership increased by 11% last year. And that roughly equates to 3 million people. So more and more people are using rail service. Empire Builder in particular, which it's still the one train, so you're at limited capacity with how many trains that are out there. But that one train last year gained 10% in ridership. So the route between the Twin Cities and Chicago on that is the biggest part of that, and that is gaining ridership. Amtrak, because of this, is looking to increase capacity on that one train by adding a couple cars as an interim step to and take care of this demand before they have to start adding more trains. The benefit to Minnesota of this corridor is key, because getting the Twin Cities to Chicago by implementing a higher speed train, you can save 2.5 hours, and you would add 6 daily trips. The economic benefit is there's almost 1,600 new permanent jobs by this, which is a lot of this information is on this sheet, which is really helpful to start to show how you start to get things going. And why we're asking for the $10 million is really to get at environmental work, as Representative Lilly said. We need to get this corridor set up so that we can start to implement things, and the first part of that is the environmental work. We can then be more in line with states like Wisconsin, Illinois, and Michigan that have done their environmental work, in some cases purchased lines and implemented service. The Hiawatha corridor between Milwaukee and Chicago has 95% on-time performance. Ridership is constantly increasing, and they have 7 additional trains that are basically full going between those two major cities. It's time for us to be have that same ability to add those 6 trains to Chicago. There's a large federal role in this that is kind of kick-starting things with the passage of the Railroad Safety and Enhancement Act last year that really provided the capital assistance 80-20 funds so that states could start to implement these corridors faster. and local government. What are we doing as counties and regional railroad authorities along this line? Well, Ramsey County, along with Washington County Regional Railroad Authorities, has put together a draft joint powers agreement to cover the entire corridor, that entire 150 miles. It's eight counties, about 22 cities, and it also has been sent out to Rochester to say, hey, we're reaching out. We'd like to have you involved in this corridor as well. And the goal there is to get everybody speaking with one local voice, so when there's questions about where do things go, what's the best service option, we have one group of local advocates and local officials who say, this is what it is, and this is what we believe needs to be done to make this corridor successful. So we're hoping to have a joint powers agreement in place by April, so a real quick timeline. This joint powers agreement would be also charged with making sure there's coordination with Amtrak and the railroads that are involved, along with the Prairie Island Indian community as the track goes through their property just north of Red Wing. There's federal and state agencies that need coordination, along with Wisconsin, due to going into Wisconsin, and need to make sure that they have also upgraded service from Madison to La Crosse. So the structure is also very flexible to make sure that as new entities come along and new stakeholders come along, they can be incorporated as well. And to just touch briefly on Representative Holbert's question, we don't have a specific number of what would go towards the Minneapolis-St. Paul analysis versus the environmental work on the balance of the corridor, but it would be the vast majority would go to the environmental work.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rogers, I appreciate that. Has there been an assessment? I mean, is this like formalized that to pay into this so much per mile a track per state, or is there, I mean, when you say most of it, I'm trying to decide who's going to make this decision. Is the legislature going to make the decision as far as how much our fair share is? Is there some formula?
Mr. Rogers.
For, Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, for the $10 million total or for the overall building of the corridor? I guess I have the question.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at, we amended the bill to say we're going to do $10 million to do all of these things, and it talks about for the state's share of the environmental analysis. So what is the state's share? Who determined that? Is it a hard cost? Is it flexible depending on how the bids come in and as a portion of the work? Or,
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, it would be a flexible cost based on how much analysis needed to be done. The $10 million would give us a pot of money to draw from depending on how much federal would come in based on what work needed to be done and what the bids came back at. So it wouldn't be a set number.
Okay. Mr. Chair, maybe I'll try this approach. Can you give me the range as far as what you think this environmental analysis is going to cost, low end, high end?
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Chair.
Justin Holbrook, I think Justin Hausman apparently has some answers.
Mr. Chair and members, the $10 million was from a study on the entire line that came from the Midwest Regional Rail office in Chicago, and so that's their number for the work, the environmental study, and even some of the preliminary of the Minnesota portion. So that $10 million number comes from the Midwest Regional Rail people. They gave that as their estimate for our portion. And you asked a good question about lines 110 and 111. And it may be really drafted in such a way that those lines seem to relate to the Minneapolis study. The intention there is all of this analysis must also include an updated analysis of all previous passenger rail studies providing service in this corridor. And that would include all those years that we put money into the Red Rock studies, which Mr. Rogers was part of. And we don't want to do all that work over, since the state has already paid for them. So that those two lines really refer to the past work that this state has, in fact, funded on that Red Rock Corridor portion, and not the Minneapolis portion. And so the reason for putting those two lines is we don't want to do work over that has been done if work has been paid for by the state, and the intention is to hold down costs and not redo work that's already
Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess my concern on this language, very little of the concern, is with lines 10 and 11. My major concern is how do we know how much the state is in for as far as fair share goes, and then is it reasonable or even doable to do the additional analysis of the future extension with this, or how likely are we going to have to put more money towards that analysis? I'm just trying to get a feel for how organized they are, how much they, you know as far as costs. I'm assuming there's a federal match to this because you don't get much of a study for $10 million. And I don't know if there's a federal match for an extension or not study, but I'm just trying to track the dollars here and what the intent is.
Mr. Rogers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, there would be federal funds to go after to do the environmental analysis for the Minnesota piece, which is based on the language that, as you know, the $10 million would just go to the Minnesota piece of the environmental analysis for the longer course.
And Mr. Chair, does that follow an 80-20 match in this case, or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, for the state the federal legislation that was passed last year, yes, it would be 80-20.
All right, thank you.
Proceed. That's your testimony.
One more thing. I would like to see the data that supports your 1,570 permanent jobs, how you arrived at that number. There's got to be some supporting information. Yeah. That seems like quite a few permanent jobs.
Are you responding to the question or not?
Oh, I think he might be able to.
Mr. Rogers?
Chair, Representative Holbert, I can get the report that has the economic analysis on those jobs creation and for the corridor, for the entire system is in whole. Okay.
Representative Welty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lilly, I guess my first question and to your testifier as well is, how does this tie in with the proposal that you're bringing forward and requesting $10 million for an environmental study? How does that tie into the work that's going to be done here in the state to put together the statewide rail plan, not only for passenger rail, but also for freight?
Mr. Rogers?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it ties in that it's part of the overall study. It's just a little bit further ahead of where a lot of the statewide rail plan is. The statewide rail plan is saying what corridors make sense. There's been enough analysis done on this corridor by the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative and others to say that this is the high-speed rail corridor between the Twin Cities and Chicago. So we've gotten economic analysis done. We've gotten some additional study of initial ridership done. So we know that this corridor makes sense, whereas the statewide plan says what else is out there. This corridor will slide into the statewide plan, and we're working along with MnDOT and others to make sure that we keep them moving at the same pace so that we're working together on them as opposed to working separately.
You have a follow-up?
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Leader, or Chair Leader, and to Representative Lilly. I'm looking here at the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative, the study that was done back in 1998. And so it's a 10-year-old study, and a lot of things have changed in the past 10 years. Some of the things that have changed, of course, we look at the economics of fuel. We also look at population, look at ridership, and the studies that were done 10 years ago may need to be updated. And so a couple of questions that I have, when you move this bill forward, it looks like we're designating a certain route, and you're saying it's the preferred route that's been designated by the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative. But I've had some questions raised just about the speed that can be achieved along the river. And so I'm wondering if you have any further data to back up the claim. And I know in the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative document that I have here, the study, it says that the preferred speed would be 110 miles per hour. But I know that having grown up near the river, having spent a lot of days down the river, I know that there are some sharp curves on the current freight rail line. And I've been told that it would actually cost a substantial amount of money to upgrade that line in order to achieve the high speeds, and that in some areas of that rail line the maximum speed might be 80 miles per hour. We might not be able to achieve the 110 miles per hour, and then looking beyond that into the future, if we want to make further upgrades to the rail line to truly achieve greater high speed, above 110 miles per hour. So we're looking at 140, 180. Do you have any data to back up that that can be achieved along the current preferred route, which is along the river?
Mr. Richard.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the current preferred route, like you said, that the goal is to get to 110 along the entire corridor, but in some cases there will be curves where you're not going to be able to do it. But I think the more important thing to think about there is to make look at this as you're making a number of upgrades to increase the average speed along that corridor so you get that travel time reduction. You may get more bang for your buck by increasing the average speed to 80 miles an hour over 50 miles than getting up to 110 miles an hour over a 10-mile section. It may cost you the same amount of money. Once you get over that 124-mile-an-hour threshold, the Federal Railroad Administration makes you grade separate the whole corridor. So essentially it becomes an interstate highway for trains. And when you start to do that, your curves get a lot longer. It starts to take up more right-of-way. So that there are definitely ways to do it along the river. There will be some tight spots, but new corridors take quite a bit of right-of-way as well. So I think as you go forward with your environmental analysis and engineering, you start to see where your limitations show up for something much bigger down the road. But the benefit of the river corridor is that you can get it in place now and really start moving people on it.
Just for the members, we're going to cut off the debate, and the mayor of Winona, we want him to testify. So I suggest if you have questions, it'll be, because we're going to cut them off pretty quick. The only testimony we'll have is the mayor, and then we'll get to the next bill, because this bill is going to be laid over.
Right.
It's for the bond committee. Do you have a follow-up?
Just one follow-up, Mr. Chair, and then I'll end my line of questioning here. But, you know, you bring up a very good point, and I think it's incumbent for all of us around this table to be considering what investments we make now and how that's going to impact us in the future and the costs for the future. If we look at this current preferred route, and the significance of costs that we may have to bear in the future to go even higher than 110 miles per hour, it could be substantial. You're talking about building and having to acquire right-of-way and having to do the engineering along a river route. You're going to have significant environmental analysis that's going to have to be done, significant amount of cost in that route and in that corridor. And I think as we take a look at the long-term interest of the state, we should also be evaluating other routes and the cost-benefit analysis of those other routes and determining what speeds in the future we want to meet here in the state of Minnesota to move passengers not only from the Twin Cities area to Chicago but to other locations. And is it going to be timely in the future if we make this investment here on this route, or should we be looking at other routes?
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a whole raft of questions, but understanding what you just said, I'm going to try to keep this as concise as possible. Mr. Rogers, on the high-speed rail handout that we have here, to go back to the jobs issue, I look forward to seeing what the jobs are, but I'm encouraged. I'm curious about two things. Is that a net number? Because I'm assuming, because there are several different means of conveying oneself from here to Chicago already, most notably the airlines, and I noticed that our friends at Southwest just showed up in town with $49 fares again. I'm wondering if that'll be a net number. If we start doing this and subsidizing some high-speed trains, six a day? How many people are on those trains? I used to have the honor of working on the Broadway, and we could carry 17 coaches and about 500 people. And from Chicago to Philadelphia, that took a several hundred railroad employees to move that many people. And it took a fraction of that, for instance, to move them with the 747. So I'm curious about that. I'm curious about productivity. How many people are 1,570 people moving? And is that a net number? Does that take into account airline people who are going to lose their jobs? If these tickets are priced about where I think they are, is that going to have an impact on that?
Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is something that I would have to look further into the economic analysis report.
Good.
And I can happily provide that report to the whole committee as well, so everybody would know.
Probably when we get into the next committee.
Mr. Chair.
Lily.
To Representative Beard's question, too, in my other life, I work in an airline, and I'm not so certain that it necessarily will directly negatively impact
you know, people may come here and then choose to fly somewhere else or to, you know, to, I'm not certain that we'll see job loss, but I'm always skeptical. I'm glad you're asking questions, Representative Holberg asking questions about jobs, because, you know, when we do the bonding bills and in other things, we talk about jobs, and I'm all about jobs, and I'm always a little leery. And I do have a printout from these folks that says 1,500 permanent jobs, which sounds great, of course, right now with all the layoffs and everything. So we, of course, want jobs, but you bring up valid points, and I we'll look into it. And I'm sorry we don't have a full answer.
Nothing to do with the other follow-up.
Just a couple quick follow-ups, if I may. When we as government spend money on airlines, the lion's share of that money comes from the user fund, so the passenger facility tax, fuel taxes, and other things like that to build the infrastructure that the airplanes play with or work on, whether it's air traffic control or runways or what have you. When we build highways for buses and for people to convey themselves on, again, that's usually from a user fee basis where we tax them through their fuel or through their sales tax on their automobiles and so on and so forth to make that work. This strikes me as a general fund appropriation because I'm not aware of a railroad passenger tax that can generate enough money to build this. So this will be pretty much general fund dollars where we're going to start competing with other industries that we've already have a stake in and that we've already enabled by building government infrastructure. So I just want you to hold that thought and know that I'll be asking questions as this moves further along on just how this is going to work. We're going to take general tax money to compete with airlines, bus companies, and things like that, or is this actually aimed at taking cars off the highway? Would people actually do that? Things like that. Those are all things we're going to want to know. As we put this whole thing together in its cost of operation, and I'll close with this, Mr. Chairman. If Southwest can haul a 737 down to Midway at $49 and break even or make a few bucks, God bless them, I don't know how they do it. How are we going to price the tickets on travel to Chicago here? Is it going to be aimed at covering operational costs, or are we going to have some other number in the middle that we're going to create for political purposes when we price tickets from Minneapolis to Chicago?
Mr. Rogers?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the way the economic analysis studies were done was based on once the system is up and running, once you'd have those six trains a day, along with other connections to Chicago, it would pay for itself.
All right.
So.
Good.
Thank you. Representative Reinhart?
Thank you, Chair. And Mr. Rogers, Representative Lilly, one of you just addressed briefly, Representative, in your comments, you talked about this does not preclude other lines, and I know we've got MnDOT working on a statewide plan, but as a counselor, I was a cheerleader on the passenger rail from Duluth to the cities, and so I'm supportive of this because the more infrastructure we have to connect into, the more it makes our regional lines feasible. But I just want to put that on the table and get your thoughts on how you see some of the other projects that we've been working on for several years as well fitting in with this.
Mr. Representative Lilly?
Mr. Chair and Representative Reinhart, welcome aboard. During the last bonding cycle, I really bought into what Chair Hausman was doing with creating a whole network of a system, and I just thought, you know, that really made a lot of sense. And I think this, in my mind, feeds into that and enhances it. You know what, and then hopefully, you know, we see lines that go to Duluth, you know, and we'll fight whether it goes to St. Paul or Minneapolis or whatever. But I hope it happens, and you know, I'm actually excited. About these opportunities. I think, you know, we need to think outside the box and multimodally, and you know, I hope, you know, we continue to make sure we have good bus systems running, that we have good highways that people can drive on. But this is just another tool, and to add to Mr. Beard's comments, you know, hopefully it does take some people off the road and, you know, work on some of that, you know, congestion issues and sort of thing as well. But I hope we continue to grow the system, you know, that you folks have been working so hard on in this committee. And
thank you.
Representative Reiner. If you could bring the mayor up, could I ask Mr. Rogers, what would you ask the mayor, what basically is your title? I didn't catch it.
I am a senior transportation planner for the Ramsey County Regional Railroad Authority.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for giving me a few minutes to address you. Minnesota deserves good passenger rail service. I've been participating with mayors from Chicago to St. Paul to provide first a second daily Amtrak service between Chicago and St. Paul in the near future, and second, to support the high-speed rail initiative as identified in the Midwest Rail Initiative Report. 17 cities, both in Minnesota and Wisconsin, have passed resolutions of support. On January 9, 2009, I wrote on behalf of 16 mayors in Minnesota and Wisconsin to Governor Plenty and Governor Doyle, asking for their support of the second train daily and the implement of the high-speed rail as per the Midwest Rail Initiative. The Canadian Pacific Rail Line along the Mississippi River provides an existing route for additional service that can be quickly implemented. The appeal of this route is it is currently used by Amtrak and can be started up with moderate costs and no significant subsidy needed. Winona is important because we have the second highest, only after the Twin Cities, Minnesota Amtrak ridership on the Empire Builder today. Also, Winona is important because we can serve as a link between Rochester and other southern Minnesota cities to the potential high-speed rail in Winona, going through Winona. 17 cities from Winona to Tyler were contacted. I asked for their support to include discussions for potential passenger rail service from Winona West along what is commonly referred to as the DM&E rail line, which was recently purchased by the Canadian Pacific Line. While the Midwest Rail Initiative report calls for bus feeder service only, we should explore, and we will explore, the rail service also. We are waiting to hear what interest there is from these cities. I also have the support of Winona State University President Judith Romelli and the support of Winona State University, Winona Chamber of Commerce. Joseph H. Boardman, President, the new President and CEO of Amtrak, in a letter to me dated on February 3, 2009, stated basically what you've already heard, the support of Amtrak for the Midwest Rail Initiative, which includes the line from St. Paul, Winona, and Chicago. Minnesota needs to be taking action now to move forward with additional rail service between Chicago, Winona, and St. Paul, and I urge you to support House File 259. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We can take a couple questions, if not. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and Representative Lilly. This bill will be held over for probably, we refer to the bonding committee. Not probably, that's what's going to be happening, right? And we won't be taking a vote on it, as you're aware. Yep.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, and I just really think that this is a great opportunity that we have here, and thank you for hearing us. And we also had a former representative, Sharon, out here that came down from Winona to testify, and so you can work him over after we're done here as well. So thank you very much.
Representative Liebling. Representative Welty, do you want to move the bill?
Right. Mr. Chair, I move House File 124 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Representative Sebring, we are not going to run over many times, so you're going to have to go give the best minutes if you can. We've got time, but I mean.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I actually have four potential testifiers here, and if we're short on time, we can skip some of them. But members, I'm here with House File 124, which is a bill to provide some funding to study the feasibility of constructing a high-speed rail line between Chicago and the Twin Cities through Rochester. And I understand that there's an amendment, Mr. Chair, which maybe we can take care of that.
In your packet 80124A1, Representative Welke.
Mr. Chair, I moved the amendment 124A1. Members, this amendment simply puts the bill in the form that we need to be consistent with bonding funds and the use of bonds.
You want to address the... you think you made a good enough presentation so they can vote? Okay. Any questions on the amendment? Representative Morrow, you had a question? No,
absolutely
okay.
Not. He
explained
the
vote. If not, all in favor. The amendment, say aye.
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 Contrary. The amendment 80124A1 passed. Representative Levy.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't actually have a copy of the amendment, but I'm depending on Representative Welty on that one. I'd like to call up, I'd like to call up Dr. Wyatt Decker from the Mayo Clinic and ask him to begin the presentation. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to join you today. I will keep my comments brief, but this is an incredibly important issue for the city of Rochester, for southeastern Minnesota, and for the Mayo Clinic. So thank you again for the opportunity to join you today.
Would you identify yourself, or maybe you are?
Yes, my name is Wyatt Decker. I'm an emergency medicine physician at the Mayo Clinic. I'm a member of the Southeast Minnesota High Speed Rail Alliance, and I am a member of the governing body, the executive board of the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Leaders at the Mayo Clinic are constantly evaluating how do we help grow and maintain the role of the Mayo Clinic as an international and national destination medical center. I'm sure that this is not news to you, but there are a few aspects of the Mayo Clinic that some of you might not be aware of. Mayo Clinic brings into the state approximately 500,000 visitors each year, patients, family members, relatives, friends, loved ones. Mayo Clinic serves a unique role for the citizens of Minnesota in that it is a tremendous resource for all of us who live in the state. If we should fall ill or have a loved one who falls ill in our own backyard, we have an international death-based medical center. Yet at the same time, and something that's not widely recognized, is that the Mayo Clinic is a tremendous economic engine, not only for southeast Minnesota, but for the state of Minnesota. And 2 years ago, we commissioned a study to help understand the economic impact of Minnesota, and we're surprised ourselves to learn that Minnesota generates about $4 billion of revenue for the state of Minnesota. That's over 1% of our gross state revenue. And also, when you think of the current economic climate, considering over the past year that the Mayo Clinic has actually grown in employees, bringing on approximately 960 new employees over the past 12 months. So as we consider these kinds of issues, we have to ask ourselves, how do we maintain and grow our position in the national and international medical community? There are aspects of that that are beyond the scope of our conversation here about measuring and providing truly outstanding quality of care, providing cutting-edge research and outstanding education. But another critical aspect of these considerations is making sure that the Mayo Clinic is accessible to those from the region and from outside of Minnesota, but in the upper Midwest. As we consider this, we have recognized that high-speed rail is a key aspect of a long-term vision that will not only help the Mayo Clinic provide care to patients and families, help us remain a major economic engine for the state of Minnesota, but also help the entire economic growth of our region. So what we're asking in consideration in HF 124 is really just that the route of a high-speed rail be considered between Chicago and the Twin Cities that would include Rochester. I think all of us recognize the decision to
pursue high-speed rail is a major multi-generational decision. This is not something to take lightly. This will have significant expenses. Some excellent points have been raised that we would concur need to be looked into carefully before we move forward on this project. We think this is an exciting project, and we think this is a project that requires vision. And that vision needs to include the major economic hubs of our state. And Rochester is one of those. And Mayo Clinic is a key part of this puzzle as we move forward. A couple of other quick comments. One is Mayo Clinic and Southeast Minnesota's interest in rail transportation actually dates back to the early 1900s when the Mayo brothers themselves designed hospital cars with Northwestern rail lines that actually came to Rochester. So there's a long history of our engagement in this and other modes of transportation to Rochester. Second is that with the events surrounding 9/11 and changes in national and international transportation, we approached the issue of rail transportation with renewed vigor. We commissioned a study that looked at the citizens of Southeast Minnesota and tried to measure their engagement and support for high-speed rail. We found that by a 3-to-1 margin, citizens of Southeast Minnesota favor high-speed rail. We recognize that there are many, many details that need to be ironed out before we move forward. And finally, I would say that the Mayo Clinic now recognizes that historically we have taken a very quiet posture in engagement with the state. But as we look forward to the future, we need an effective partnership with the state. And we are very engaged and want to contribute meaningful to that partnership. But we also will look to all of you and leaders of the state to effectively partner with us so that we can all move forward and ensure the economic viability of our state in generations to come.
I'd like to turn it over to our next speaker.
Yes. May I have some questions? Are there questions of Mr. Decker? No, thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I don't know how much time are we going to have here.
You have four testifiers, you said?
I have three others.
We'll see how it goes.
Can we go through them quickly? Then I would call John Ackerman.
Chairman, committee members, thank you for the opportunity today to speak. My name is John Ackerman, Vice President of Government Affairs with the Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce. I've been active in high-speed rail for several years now. We have a long history of the chamber. Senator Kaskaden actually started this process back in the early 90s, being involved. We've had several different committees and task forces that have looked at this. I am a member of the Midwest Interstate Passenger Rail Commission, been on there for 6 years, along with Representative Slocum, Representative Hornstein as active members, and it's really fortunate times now. I've been involved in this, and I think things are really changing on a national scope on how important rail is, and so I think we're on the cutting edge of some big opportunities here for the Midwest and, of course, Minnesota. The Rochester area is very fortunate to have a strong economic foundation, but again, we should never take this for granted. In addition to serving our major employers, Rochester community leaders are investing efforts to establish Rochester as a bioscience hub, positioning the community as a competitor in the emerging field. Again, this is obviously Mayo Clinic is a big part of this, but we have several area companies that could really take advantage of this. And again, this would include a major part of Minnesota as well, taking advantage of this rail connection. Again, connecting Rochester to a national high-speed rail passenger rail system provides significant benefits and economic security for all of Southeast Minnesota. On the airline side, we heard earlier comments about that. I think we have a real concern about what will happen with those smaller, maybe the 300-mile hub distances, especially for Rochester to Chicago. What's going to happen? I think having a backup plan, such as a high-speed rail connection, is very important for that to continue. And again, obviously for Mayo Clinic and all of Southeast Minnesota to have that plan. What's going to happen with the airline industry in the future? Obviously, with the changes with Northwest and Delta, I think that's something to be concerned about, and very important to have this piece here. Again, Rochester is recognized as an economic hub in Southeast Minnesota. Mayo Clinic, IBM, and several other major employers. It is important to capitalize on opportunities to enhance the economic standing of the region into the future. Again, final point, it is important to remember that siting a high-speed rail line is again a multi-generational decision, and therefore one needs to consider the factors that will support its long-term success. And again, a Rochester route is the best route to connect the Twin Cities to Chicago due to the existing potential passenger base. Again, from the hundreds of thousands of people that obviously are patients of Rochester, but family members, the different conventions we bring to Southeast Minnesota, not only from a regional, national, but an international aspect. So again, I appreciate the time to speak to you and any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Mr. Eckert? Did you say
Eckerman?
Eckerman. First of all, just an observation for the committee's consumption as we think about this. In the history of the state, there never has been a railroad line from the Twin Cities to Rochester. Sometimes we think there used to be. There's lines from here to Kansas City, and there's lines from Rapid City to Winona. That one goes through Rochester. But I'm trying to think about how we could easily make it work using an existing right-of-way, or is it actually your intention that new right-of-way be acquired from Rochester to the Twin Cities? And I'll have a follow-up beyond that.
Okay. Chairman, Representative, the President, we aren't advocating a certain route. Obviously, there's several options out there, but we just want to be, again, included in, again, the statewide plan. We think being the third largest city in the state and economic, economic significance of Rochester, that we need to be part of this. Obviously there is that east-west connection, but the north-south, there could be several options, but right now we're not advocating this. So we just want to obviously get the planning dollars to start reviewing that.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. One follow-up related to that. I'm a little puzzled, and I hope you can tell me how things have changed, but a couple of years ago, there was quite a movement to rebuild the east-west line through Rochester, and if I remember right, some of the testifiers that were just here were adamantly and vitriolically opposed to that line, even though it included ribbon rail and upping train speeds and things like that. High-speed passenger rail is also going to have a significant impact for noise, vibration, safety, and all the issues that were raised whenever we had the obstruction of the previous project. Now, I know Canadian Pacific has purchased it since, and now we have a continuous operator. The River Line and the line to Rapid City is now the same owner. What's changed that has Rochester so excited about rebuilding the line now that wasn't there just two or three years ago when we seem to be heading in the other direction?
Mr. Eckerman.
Chairman, Representative, again, that's the freight side of things. Again, we're talking passenger rail. I don't want to try to mix those up, but that was more of the DMA expansion, the coal train. Again, we're talking passenger rail here. I think there's a lot of differences as far as the safety and all that included. I don't want to kind of mix that up, but again, we're primarily talking passenger rail on this, and do not want to confuse the two issues.
Well, not a question, just a comment. If you lived or worked near the Northeast Corridor, where it's all passenger rail, very high speed, you'd recognize that the weight of the equipment is not that much different than the weight of a coal car or a grain hopper that's fully loaded. They still make just as much noise. They still hit cars on crossings just as hard, in fact, probably harder. But a question about how things are, and just an observation of where we've been historically. There's always been connections to be made if you try to get to Rochester from here. So we'll see how this plays out.
Okay. Any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would ask Marcia Marcoux to come up.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Although when I look at the clock, maybe I should almost say good evening here. My name is Marcia Marcoux, and I am actually the outreach coordinator for the Southeast Minnesota Rail Alliance. As a former member of the Rochester City Council, I actually had the opportunity to serve on a variety of transportation committees, both at the state and at the federal level, and I have really seen firsthand the growing interest at the federal and regional level in developing high-speed passenger rail service between regional economic centers. Minnesota, as we realize, is behind the curve in looking at how to develop an integrated statewide rail plan. We believe that high-speed passenger rail is a critical component in ensuring Minnesota and Rochester are part of the 21st century transportation system that ensures the continued growth of our community, our state, and our region. Incorporating interregional passenger rail into our nation's infrastructure is no small undertaking, but it represents the kind of forward-thinking vision the architects of the interstate system had some 60 years ago. We need this type of innovative thinking and bold vision to move forward not only as a nation, but also as a state and region. We applaud Representative Oberstar's leadership in advancing passenger rail service as a key part of the nation's transportation system. We are excited that the state has become serious about advancing passenger rail, and we believe that these decisions should be made based on an analysis of options that will not only provide the greatest benefit to the state, but also that has the best chance of success. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I would also like to acknowledge that the speaker that will follow me will definitely be able to answer, I think, some of the questions that have already been posed by some of you on this committee, and I would like to defer any time that might be available in my slot to him to do that for you.
Are there questions? No, thank you very much. It was
Marsha. Mm-hmm.
Marsha, I know that one, but
yes,
the last one I forgot, it was McGuire.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to invite Tim Geisler to come up, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the commission or committee. My name is Tim Geisler. I'm a member of the Southeast Minnesota Rail Alliance Steering Committee. I'm also a member of the Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce Board. I'm the treasurer of that board. I'm also a treasurer of the Rochester Airport Company, the company that manages the Rochester International Airport for the city of Rochester. And I was just recently appointed last April to the Metropolitan Airports Commission. So I do have an interest in transportation, although my background and my real job is in finance. As has already been discussed, there's been several studies of potential high-speed rail corridors between Chicago and the Twin Cities. The first one that I'm aware of was done in 1991, and we actually investigated multiple technologies and multiple routes to make that connection. One of the recommendations out of that study was that if you were going to invest in true high-speed rail, 180 mile an hour or more, that the Rochester route was the preferred option because of some of the constraints along the river route. However, because of the fact that they said that the high-speed technology was unproven technology, and because of the increased cost of establishing true high-speed rail, they asked that additional options to take an incremental approach be investigated. So that was in 1991. In 1999, there was a second study that was done that again looked at the Rochester route, and the recommendation out of that report said that the Rochester route should be re-examined in order to take the benefits of the true high-speed rail. And again, that 1998 study acknowledged, however, that it would be an additional cost over using existing infrastructure. However, the study said that the investment would be worth it based on the ridership and the economic benefits that could come from the Rochester route. Now, as you all know, subsequent studies and subsequent maps have focused on the use of existing rail infrastructure to ensure that that is the most expedient way to establish passenger rail service in the Midwest. But that doesn't mean that the river route is the only option that should be considered. And we're here to ask that the state provide some money to look at a Rochester route to make sure that we are making the wise investment for the future that is in the best interest of the state and that ensures the economic viability of any true high-speed rail line. That doesn't mean that there shouldn't be passenger rail service to other portions of the state and other communities. And in fact, we applaud the legislature for directing MnDOT last year to look at a statewide passenger and freight rail plan to make sure that all communities are considered in an integrated manner so that we can get the transportation that we need not only to connect the regional economic centers such as Rochester, Twin Cities, and Chicago, but also other communities that need transportation for commuters and other light rail type options. So we are here to support this bill, which would provide some money to actually fund the studies that would take an optional look at what would it take, is it possible, and what are the benefits of establishing a true high-speed rail corridor between Chicago and the Twin Cities through Rochester. And I'll stop there and open up for questions.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if this question is for the testifier, for Representative Liebling. I'm just trying to sort out, you know, witnessed from afar the DM&E wars in Rochester. And so is Rochester's message, we only want passenger rail? Is it we're willing to take freight and other rail? I mean, I'm just a little perplexed, you know, given the high level of opposition to the DM&E program in Rochester. I'm assuming you don't want your passenger rail terminals way out south of town where you wanted the DM&E trains to go. So help me understand where the city's position is, because I guess I'm not up to speed in the changes here.
Mr. Geisler?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative. I think that one of the things that was most frustrating to me as a Rochester citizen was how our position on the DM&E issue really came out. We have never been against railroads. We have never been against upgrading railroad infrastructure. But the city of Rochester and other members of the community, including Mayo Clinic, tried to point out is that building a high-speed superhighway of a freight railroad through the middle of an academic medical center just didn't make sense. And we said that we ought to look at other alternatives to provide the infrastructure and provide the service without bringing the safety issues to a community. And that's what it really came down to. There's been references to noise, vibration, and some of those other things. And I happened to be involved in the DM&E issue when it first came up. I drew the short straw to go to the first meeting in Rochester about the DM&E upgrade. And of course, at first we did raise all of the issues we could think of that needed to be studied if such a project was going to proceed. And we talked about potential issues of vibration, noise, air quality, those kind of things. But in the final analysis, it really comes down to safety. How can you ensure that the hospital patients that are in St. Mary's and Methodist Hospital in Rochester are not adversely impacted should there be a derailment on that line within blocks of the medical center, especially if that railroad is carrying hazardous materials? So what we wanted to do was to look at alternatives that would address those safety concerns. So again, it's unfortunate that it's perceived that we're anti-rail. We're not anti-rail. We just believe that if you're going to build infrastructure, you ought to do it in a way that addresses the legitimate concerns of the communities that it might impact.
And Mr. Chair, I appreciate that information. And you mentioned that you were involved in a rail group. Is this a strictly passenger rail group, or is it rail and is it freight and passenger together? Or have these two groups kind of split? And
Mr. Geisler?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm really representing the Southeast Minnesota Rail Alliance, which does focus on passenger rail, specifically high-speed passenger rail between Chicago and the Twin Cities through Rochester. There are other groups that are continuing to investigate how do we address the safety concerns of the freight issue. We also recognize, however, that when you put together the statewide rail plan, you have to include the freight railroad. Because again, when you look at the combination of freight and passenger rail, it has to be an integrated system that works for everybody. So we recognize that freight will be a component, although our focus is on passenger.
Representative Wilkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I just want to point out one thing. This is the map that Midwest Rail Association put together of the different routes of where they want the rail to go. Now, Congressman Oberstar was here, and he talked a little bit about high-speed rail, and he said that really all routes should be analyzed. Not only that, I think Congressman Oberstar has been very clear, and some of the other congressional members, about the state coming up with the final plan.
having a statewide rail plan and that being a part of what we put together. And I know Representative Congresswoman McCollum has taken position on this. She's saying it needs to go to St. Paul. And I can understand that because she represents St. Paul. I point that out because in Wisconsin, I know Wisconsin Department of Transportation right now, they're having the discussions on where this route is going to go, and there's some communities that are looking at alternative routes. And so I think it's good to have this discussion. It's good to move this legislation forward so that we can look at ridership. We can look at speeds in the future, doing long-range planning. And we can look at the cost-benefit analysis of this. So I think as we move forward, we should be looking at Minnesota's future, how we want to proceed with high-speed rail throughout the Midwest Regional Rail Initiative, and determine the route that's economically the best route to pursue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Welty. I was obviously, we're kind of on the same page with this, and I was going to say much the same thing, but I just wanted, in closing, to say a couple of things.
We have some questions.
Okay, well, then maybe I'll wait, and I'll finish up at the end.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Whoever wants to answer. A follow-up again on the controversy with the previous rail situation. So I just want to get it clarified. So you are comfortable using the rail that's already there rather than asking for a new rail to be put in apart from the hospital. Is that what I'm hearing?
Mr. Geisler.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we are not in a position to say what is the most appropriate route and what is the best way to get this done. That's what the study money is for. So if the line does use the existing infrastructure, then we want to make sure that those same safety issues that we raised on the freight would be addressed. There is a big difference, though, between having a coal train which doesn't stop in town and it brings no benefit, that just runs through the town, than a passenger rail that brings things in, so stopping and laying off passengers. So I think that we want the same concerns reviewed, but we're not in any position to decide what is the best way to make it happen.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. Since Representative Welty had referenced the rail plan, I wanted to let members know, those of you who are on the policy committee, we're going to have a hearing tomorrow involving the rail plan. And I'm frustrated it's taken us so long to get to a point where we're discussing a rail plan. One of the things that I learned as an alternate to the High Speed Rail Commission in Omaha when we met in December is that, you know, Wisconsin, Illinois, you know, they've done this. They're actually going to be able to probably access quite a bit of stimulus money, or at least in one of the drafts of the stimulus bill, they were in a position to access that money because they had a completed rail plan. And I think that ultimately that's where I think some of the issues that we're discussing today will be resolved. But we really need to pay attention to that plan. We need to make sure that it's done in a transparent and accountable way, and really look at those recommendations once it comes out. But, you know, at this point, I think we're waiting almost another 9 months before these answers come forward. I'd like to see if we can make that happen a lot faster. But that's really the basis by which I think we're going to need to make some of our decisions about routing and alignment and cost. So stay tuned, because tomorrow we'll be getting into this much more systematic way, the rail plan, tomorrow on our policy committee.
Yeah, Representative Hornstein, basically the fact that the rail plan is not here does not affect the stimulus monies for rail.
Be aware of that, Mr. Right? Chair, yes. We may be able to get I know that in one of the documents I saw that there were some signals and some crossings along the existing Amtrak route that could potentially be upgraded with the stimulus money, but my point was that Illinois and Wisconsin much further along in being able to access that money because they have completed their rail plans.
Any further questions? Scott, Representative Liebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to just say, first of all, that, you know, right now we're all experiencing how fragile our economy can be.
you know, we have industries in the state and we kind of imagine that they're there forever. And the Mayo Clinic is certainly one of those. It certainly has demonstrated a lot of economic strength, as has Southeast Minnesota generally in this downturn. But we can't take our economy for granted as we go forward. We have to keep making proper investments to make sure that we protect and preserve and build the assets that we have in the entire state. And I think some of the points that have been made are very good ones. We are not asking for anything to be predetermined. What we're really asking for here is that decisions not be made until all options are considered, and that this be really data-driven, and that we think about the whole state as we do this. I mean, we believe that since Rochester is the third largest city, and since Mayo Clinic is the largest private employer in the state and brings in, as has been mentioned here, a lot of patients and families and a lot of dollars from outside of the state and even internationally, that this is an important thing to consider. But we are not predetermining anything. And in fact, I think it bears mentioning that it's even been suggested to me at one time that our bill here said that we wanted the line to go to Minneapolis. And that is absolutely not true. As you can see, we have not prejudged where we think the route should be. We really aren't prejudging anything except that we want Rochester to be considered, that we want this to be data-driven. And if the data comes out that this isn't the best way, it isn't that Rochester isn't, you know, doesn't fit economically into the plan, that it wouldn't be, that wouldn't work for whatever reason, then so be it. But we really need to think as one state. We need to think about how to use our resources in the wisest way, with consideration to jobs and ridership and all of those things that I know this committee is grappling with and dealing with. So that's really what our bill is about. We want to be considered. We want the data to be there so that the best decisions can be made. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Representative Lieberman, and testifiers, Mr. Geisler and the others.
Thank you.
The next meeting will be February 17th at 4:30 in the same room. And if there's no further business, the meeting is adjourned.